All right, podcast listeners, welcome to another exciting edition of Community Hospitalist Podcast. Today, I have with me Dr. Craig Mackinis, a future chief medical resident at Lehigh Valley Hospital, in a budding interest in nephrology, who's going to review for us and together the Vafidin therapy, particularly as it relates to inpatient hospital medicine. And for today's review, Dr. Mackinis was kind enough to find an article from Germany in Kidney International, which appeared as a review in March of 2011. And it was actually pretty interesting in just reviewing the clinical aspects of Vafidin therapy. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Dr. Mackinis to review the article, and we'll have some discussion.
Thanks very much, Dan. This article comes from Kidney International, published in March of 2011 by Peter Gross and all. The article is really kind of a critical review article for the bearing defensive questions and antagonists in the treatment of hypoglycemia, both in the euvolemic and hypovolemic state. Just to kind of area up to speed, the Vafidins, Vafidin and Tolvaptan, the two available commercially in the U.S., are vasopressin receptor antagonists. So basically, try to excrete the excess free water that's been such a problem with hypoglycemia. This article took a look at a few different aspects of Vafidin therapy. Just kind of review briefly, you know, some of the things they looked at, some of the concerns with Vafidin, but also some of the problems they held in the future for the regulators. So this article, as I mentioned, is a review article. They looked at Vafidin used a couple different ways. They looked at it critically as would it shorten hospital duration for patients admitted with hypoglycemia? Would it prevent relapse in chronic SIAD or syndrome of inappropriate antidiuretic formula? Would it decrease the high mortality that's associated with hypoglycemia? Is the cost of chronic Vafidin therapy justified? Is there an optimal regimen? And what happens when the Vafidins correct the hypoglycemia too quickly? So, the article starts off with an analogy related to a car dealership, where they describe purchasing a new car with all the bells and whistles. And they make the analogy that a Vafidin is sort of like a new car with all the bells and whistles. Although, when you buy a new car, you're not really sure, you know, what gear to drive it in, what type of road to run it on, and how much cost and maintenance might be associated with it. To compare this to a Vafidin therapy, is really not knowing the correct situations to use, how to monitor it, how to use it safely, and how to use it effectively. They kind of carry this analogy throughout the article. The one thing they talk about is the prevalence of hypoglycemia to a state that is the most chronic and frequent electrolyte disorder encountered in the hospital. A lot of times it can present as anything from coma to seizures, and anything as benign as apathy, depression, weakness, or change in taste and mood. They note that therapy really has not been directed to the SIAD itself, but rather there's been indirect treatments, things such as fluid restriction, lithium use, dimethylcycline, urea, hypertonic saline, occasionally loop diuretics, and continuous venous infiltration, and sustained low efficiency hemodialysis. There are a few ways that have been historically used to treat hypoglycemia. They mentioned specifically some of the downfalls of each of these modalities. Then they go on to talk about the uses of Vafidins, both in the euvolemic, or the SIADH state, and also in the hypovolemic state, cardiac failure, and liver cirrhosis. And then they go on to talk about the the indications for that is really not being clear. They talk about different aspects of symptomatic hypernatremia and what exactly does qualify. You mentioned some of the things like coma and seizures. We also mentioned some of the subtle symptoms of hypernatremia, such as weakness, apathy, and depressed mood. They give a few anecdotes of patients they've treated with severe hypernatremia, such as a level of 100 to 110, which have been asymptomatic, and then patients with a relative mild hypernatremia of a rate of a level of about 130 to 135 who have been fairly asymptomatic. They go on a little bit to talk about the cost associated with hypernatremia. They estimate that there's $1.6 to $3.6 billion in healthcare dollars spent treating hypernatremia and some of the comorbidities associated with it. Then they go on to talk about individual bathroom therapy and how expensive it actually is. They mentioned that in March of 2011, this article was published that a tablet of fulvaptan in the United States costs approximately $244. And this is something that we need to take every day to effectively continue to treat the hypernatremia. Again, on that note, they mentioned that the duration of therapy is really not been determined, as the process that's created the hypernatremia still exists after the therapy is gone, especially in the case of SID, which is a malignancy, or hypervolemic hypernatremia for heart failure. In figure one in the article, they demonstrate a very interesting figure where they have patients with hypernatremia walk across a room in a straight line. They show variability in their gait, and then they do a repeat evaluation of the patient on vascular therapy with the hypernatremia corrected, and you can see an appreciable difference in the straight linear walk. They also go on to evaluate the morbidity and mortality benefits that vascular potentially have. And that they've related the Edwards trial published for heart failure. And they've shown that in all-cause mortality, even after a course of 24 months, the Zafian did not significantly reduce mortality. And then they go on to talk about the safety, notably rapid correction of Zafian therapy. And they talk about how to go back and back titrate, and they say that the data really isn't available to do that. So they recommend that more trials be ongoing into the safety and reversibility of adaptive therapy. They go on to talk about their concluding comments. They say that Afghans likely do have a role. We're just not really clear what that role is. They do admit to being overly critical with Afghan therapy in this article. But I guess they're looking for the evidence and strong clinical trials to really support the therapy.
Well, thank you, Craig. That was just a terrific review of what I think is. Craig picked up this article as a terrific article. I loved it. I wish there were almost more articles like this, because it really gave a lot of clinical thoughts on sort of a drug and how to use it clinically in a very memorable way that helped drive home some points. So, just to reinforce some of the things that Craig was talking about, I think that the main barrier actually with this drug is cost, since just from a hospital medicine standpoint, anybody who's put on the drug can never actually get the drug. And as I was thinking about it, when you think about high-cost medications, most of the time they do something very critical, and this medication, while helping some symptoms, doesn't seem to have the critical function to support its high cost. However, you'd really hate to throw it away because it's so very, very neat in terms of mechanism. And the other thing I thought was interesting was, as the authors point out, the indication that you would think with this drug would naturally be suited for acute symptomatic hyponatremia has been the least studied of the indications. I'm assuming because there's not a big market. So if I'm going to develop a drug, I'd prefer to try and figure out if I could use that drug in heart failure rather than acute symptomatic hyponatremia. So I kind of took away from this article that it was a drug whose had a very interesting mechanism of action, addressed a very specific set of problems, and currently has a very narrow indication since we're primarily limited by cost. And I'd say personally, maybe I've seen this drug used a handful of times in the course of a year. And I'll kind of defer to Greg whether he has any other sort of take-home thoughts on this.
Thanks. I think the big thing I took home from this article was the Vafians, as effective as they are, really don't solve the problem. They'll solve the symptoms and they'll treat the electrolytes. They really won't treat the underlying problem of the patient, be it the heart failure, the malignancy associated with SIADH. So I think it's as beneficial as they can possibly be. The efficacy and the mortality and morbidity benefit really hasn't been shown yet. So I guess, I'll kind of keep these in my back pocket as I move forward in my career, but I wouldn't rush to use them any more so than I would the conventional therapy for the meclocycline and the hypertonic saline and the more tried to treat therapies for hypertension.
My only other take-home message was if I had enough money, I would totally buy myself one of the Vaftans if I developed SIADH, because being on a fluid restriction is probably like one of the worst things that can possibly happen to you. And it's just very difficult for the patients to tolerate. So I would be inclined to take Vaftan and drink as much as I wanted. But $7,000 a month would be about, my math escapes me, but I think everyone could do the math. It's about $7,000 a month. But the yearly cost would be fairly significant. Give me the bath can. Let me roll. So I think that there's been a little bit of an untapped market for the drug because it works in such a very neat way, but just the cost is so overwhelming. So that would be my issue with the only issue I had with the author's point, because I don't know why you would use these. If cost wasn't a factor, then I don't think there would even be a conversation. And most patients with SIADH, and there are significant cancer-associated SIADH and otherwise, I think it would be a no-brainer to give the vaccine, as well as patients with heart failure who have hyponatremia, even though we're not sure if correcting hyponatremia improves their mortality. We don't think Lasix does anything for mortality either, so I would probably use the Vaftan as an add-on, adjunctive diuretic if possible, you know, an issue. So to me, this is a very, very neat drug, who's that's priced itself out of anyone actually using it.
To echo that, I think the ability to use this probably for acute symptomatic and compensated heart failure would be a great niche market for this drug, if it's shown to have benefit over acute ultrafiltration, electrophoresis, any type of modality. To do something like that with a pill rather than invasive catheter and that machine would be really remarkable. I think they might find themselves a match in that market.
Yeah, so if the price came down, you could send people home on Lasix and Tolvaptan, diurese people that way and watch their electrolytes and put them on a little low-dose Tolvaptan, their competition Lasix has absolutely zero mortality benefit. So, again, it's all about the dollar on this one. It's been a very neat drug, and unfortunately, just at this point, very limited use. So I'd like to thank Dr. Mackinnis for joining us on this podcast. We'll have to have him back soon. Keep all those listener comments coming. We're continually trying to improve the podcast. And I can be reached at dan.valanches@gmail.com with any questions or comments. Thank you.